Coming up on New York Now, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer travels upstate.
I think the report should be made completely public. I think when you're dealing with the possibility of collusion with the Russians interfering with an election, any foreign power, we got to know everything.
And we'll sit down with Manhattan Senator Robert Jackson.
Our governor is a master at classic divide and conquer. So, you know, I've heard upstate versus downstate, rich versus poor, urban versus city.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. Governor Cuomo's budget amendments try to close a deficit, but they would give him more power.
Our headlines start with Chuck Schumer's visit to the Capital Region. The senior U.S. senator from New York appeared at the University at Albany's Cancer Research Center Wednesday, where he announced the EPA's intention to establish a maximum contaminant level standard under the Safe Water Drinking Act for PFOA and PFOS chemicals.
That means now that the federal government for the first time recognizes these bad chemicals as carcinogens, and that it puts the might of the federal government behind getting rid of these contaminants, to make sure that they don't get to levels in drinking water that become dangerous.
Schumer appeared with the mayor of Hoosick Falls, a community affected by contaminated water back in 2015 when high levels of PFOA were discovered by a local resident.
The sad truth of the matter is that there will be many more communities across the nation who will discover that they have these toxic chemicals in their water and in their blood. What these community needs are real national leadership and clear guidance. The EPA must act not just on PFOA and PFOS, but on the entire family of PFOS chemicals.
We also asked Schumer about reports that Robert Mueller would soon be releasing his long-awaited findings to the Justice Department.
CNN reported this afternoon that the Mueller report might be released as soon as next week. One, what's your reaction to that? Two, do you think it should be made public?
On the first, I don't know the reaction. I haven't studied the CNN report, and Mueller keeps everything very close to the vest, as he should. That's what a good prosecutor does. I think the report should be made completely public. I think when you're dealing with the possibility of collusion with the Russians interfering with an election, any foreign power, we got to know everything. Who did what, when they did it, what was done, how it affected things, how we can prevent it. The only parts of the report that should not be made public, there are certain parts that might reveal intelligence sources, and those should be redacted, but everything else should be made public.
Also this week, local government officials from both sides of the aisle gathered in Rensselaer County, just across the river from the state capitol, to protest state cuts in AIM funding, which is short for Aid and Incentives for Municipalities. Governor Cuomo proposed in the state budget a cut of around $60 million. In the 30-day amendments released last week, the governor revised the original proposal and will now use internet sales tax revenue to, as his office said, make whole the cuts in funding. Although the bill has not passed the legislature yet, the collection is expected to start June 1st. And the second floor said the revenue will be around $390 million. Counties will then be directed to share the money with the towns and villages affected by the cut. That wasn't good enough for some elected officials, including Rensselaer County Executive Steve McLaughlin.
The state needs to take their responsibility seriously and provide this aid and incentives back where it belongs. When the governor says he restored it, restoring something means you put it back the way it was. He actually just shifted the buck over to us and handed us a bill.
Time now for this week's New York Now poll question. Are you disappointed Amazon decided not to move its second headquarters to New York City? Vote at nynow.org. Let's take a look at the results from last week's question. Would you like to see New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio run for president? It's been mentioned as a possibility, but the vast majority of our voters said no thanks. Anthony is in Eastchester watching on WNET. He has messed up the city. We don't need him to mess up the country. Paul in Clifton Park, one of the few who voted yes, says of de Blasio, he has the appropriate experience running a large governmental unit and has done a good job of it.
And finally, Larry in Great Neck, a longtime viewer on WLIW, said self-ego will defeat him, as it did for John Lindsay and Rudy Giuliani, who also thought that they were presidential material. Thanks for all those who took the time to vote. To do so this week again, head to nynow.org. It's where you'll find all of our past programs and links to us on social media, including Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where the handle is @nynow_PBS. While you're there, you can find a link to my paper's Capital Confidential blog, also available at timesunion.com. All right, now we're at the Reporters Roundtable, where we're happy to be joined by Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. Thanks very much for coming in. So, Karen, there was more fallout, and there's likely to be more in the weeks ahead, from the decision by Amazon to pull out of its huge development, promising at least 25,000 jobs. On Wednesday, Senator Mike Gennaris, who is seen as kind of the leader of the opposition to the Amazon deal, joined with progressive colleagues, including Senator Julia Salazar and Assemblyman Ron Kim, and Connecticut officials to call for an end, a multi-state compact that would end corporate welfare.
Yeah, they seem to be doubling down on this issue, and that bill would prohibit these competitions in the future where states have to compete against one another in this kind of Hunger Games type of competition and offer huge subsidies to these major companies. You know, this whole Amazon thing, it just seems to me like it's a turning point somehow. But is it a turning point for good or for bad? Like, is New York City really going to suffer because we don't get these high-tech jobs? Or is it a turning point that maybe corporations will have to cooperate with communities more? I feel like we're right in the middle of something, and it's hard to tell, you know, who's gonna win. It's also a split in the Democratic Party between people like Governor Cuomo, who, you know, is more of a moderate, more of a 1990s Clinton-style Democrat, and the new progressives that are really, you know, kind of influencing this whole thing here.
Matt, Republicans are seizing on this. Yes. They clearly recognize that this is going to be something of a rallying cry for the 2020 elections.
Absolutely. You're seeing that on Twitter with the spokespeople for the Republicans in the Senate. A lot of them, I don't think, were that even crazy about the idea initially. So
John Flanagan denounced it
when it was first introduced. They're playing both sides of the aisle here, as it sometimes happens. But they're starting early. We'll see if it has effect. I wonder, you know, Mike Gianaris, he was on Twitter on Friday morning, and there were shots of him just kind of shaking hands with people outside the subway. I'm wondering if he's potentially, you know, worried about a possible challenger. I don't know if that's really a strong option down there, but interesting to see him kind of just go out and shaking hands. And
oh, I think he is. I think he's definitely worried that somebody could primary him from the left, and he doesn't want that. He wants to keep his seat. And
but
maybe,
is it realistic?
Well, you know, look what happened to Joe Crowley when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez won his seat. So I think that they're seeing the warning sign and that there's a shift to the left within at least, you know, that part of the Democratic Party, that region.
But a good sign
party,
for him
that
is that he's got Ocasio-Cortez on his
yeah,
side.
Yeah, that's the thing. Absolutely. He seems to me to be inoculated from a challenge from the left because of his opposition to the Amazon deal.
Doesn't hurt to fight it, though, just in case.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Or does he want higher office? He's always been somebody who's been eyed for that. He sat out this most recent election, decided not to run for attorney general. Is he positioning self thinking that, you know, the Democratic Party is becoming more progressive, it's not as moderate as the Cuomo wing, who I'm not sure belongs to the Cuomo wing in New York State anymore of the Democratic Party?
Speaking of the governor, we had his amendments to his budget proposal.
That's right.
And among them, kind of the most high profile elements, a proposal to close three prisons, which almost certainly means three prisons upstate.
That's
the
right.
Governor would have unilateral power to pick those three unlucky prisons, if there is such a thing as a lucky prison.
Well, luck, course, we should point out lucky for the local people who work there,
yes,
not so lucky
exactly
for the people who might be incarcerated on, you know, some kind of charges that might you know, in modern day, they might not have been incarcerated on. And that's the whole tension with this, is that, you know, the mass incarceration, they're trying to change that so there's fewer people in prison. But a lot of upstate communities have nothing but these prisons to work for. So that's where I think that's where the tension's going to be in that.
We saw some releases by some upstate lawmakers like Steve Hawley, who was over in Batavia, where there's prisons. Our colleagues up at Mountain Lake PBS have covered the concern in the North Country that they have, where they saw prison closures during Cuomo's tenure up at Chateauguay and I think Lyons. So, yeah, they're worried for sure.
We also saw in headlines the upset from local officials, county officials, to the curtailment of AIM funding, of course. And the budget amendments included sort of a dedicated tax mechanism, this online sales tax that would now go to the counties, and the counties could then distribute it to the localities.
Yeah, it's not a lot of money, but it caused kind of a ruckus. So the governor's decided, despite the deficit, he would find a way to kind of restore it. Not everybody's totally happy about that, but at least it's a way. He also wants to cut $500 million from the Medicaid budget reimbursements to providers, and that's riling up the Healthcare Workers Union, SEIU 1199, as well as the Greater New York Hospital Association, and they're threatening that they're going to put ads on TV. They weakened former Governor George Pataki, former Governor Elliot Spitzer, when Pataki and Spitzer tried to make cuts to health care. I'm kind of surprised that Cuomo is actually taking them on, because in 9 years in office, he has not taken on the health care industry. He prefers to fight with the teachers union and the education community, but this would be a step to take them on.
We're talking upstate issues. We're talking downstate issues. There are proposals. There's much talk again of the idea of examining the idea of splitting New York into two states. Senator Daphne Jordan from up around the Capital Region introduced a bill that would create a working group within the Comptroller's office that would examine the potential fiscal implications of splitting the state right along the Westchester County line.
Not the first time I've heard these proposals. They come up periodically, and they usually go nowhere. Honestly,
so far they've definitely gone nowhere since we only have one. Since it's only called New York now, as opposed
That's right. In all the centuries that we've had New York.
Right.
Steve Hawley, who I mentioned earlier from the Batavia area, which is in between Rochester and Buffalo, has put out a press release about this, I think literally for like 4 or 5 years in a row. Of course, it goes away. I went to a secession rally in Bainbridge, which is in the Southern Tier, back in 2015, I think it was. It was one of the saddest things I ever went to. I was the only member of the media there. There was about 100 people scattered, some people arguing with each other on stage. I don't think we're going to be seeing New Amsterdam, which is the name they want for this new upstate state, anytime soon.
There's no Jeff Davis yet emerged for upstateistan. All right. When lawmakers get back on Tuesday, of course, the budget negotiation will begin in earnest. And
that's
one
right.
issue that's going to be near the top of the list is, of course, school funding. And Karen, you did an interview that was very much concerned with that.
Yeah. Senator Robert Jackson, he's a freshman senator, but he has a long history involved in state policies, including being the lead plaintiff in the Campaign for Fiscal Equity case, which sued the state over school funding. The court ruled 12 years ago that schools were owed about $4 billion more a year. To date, that has not been paid, and that's the center of a big fight that is going to go on in the budget, and Jackson's going to be at the heart of it. Senator Robert Jackson, thanks for joining us on New York Now.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, one of your many claims to fame is you were the original plaintiff in the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, CFE, case. I'm wondering why you decided to do it. It was in 1993, right? And did you think it would take a quarter century for it to play out?
Well, yeah. Why did I do it? Because the need was there. I knew that the system was cheating our children in New York City. I was the president of a school board, and I was continuously going down to yearly budget meetings. continuous budget meetings at the New York City Board of Education, and every year they were cutting back our funding in our district. And so I turned to Michael Rebell and said, something has to happen because we cannot continuously cut school aides, paraprofessionals, bilingual coordinators in our schools.
So it played out, the court decision, was it in early 2006, right? When the highest court finally decided, correct?
That was the final decision, yes.
Yeah, and it's still playing out in terms of you and other advocates don't think that the court order has really been fulfilled. Recently, we've heard Governor Cuomo say that it's settled that if you still are looking at CFE and the court decision, it's ghosts of the past and we should forget about it and move on. Is that true?
I think the governor is playing with words. So from a technical legal point of view, the highest court in New York State, the Court of Appeals decision was in 2006, but it basically said that we won. And the kids in New York City are entitled to about $1.94 billion and $2004. And when you take that to 2006, I'd say it's about over $2 billion. But that was the court decision, but the implementation was the important part.
Yeah, and that hasn't happened, you don't think?
Well, the foundation was established when our governor, Eliot Spitzer, got together with the legislature and came up with an agreement.
That's right. In response, they did the foundation, so-called foundation aid that you hear a lot about.
And that's, you're right.
That was supposed to be the formula to fix everything.
And that foundation aid formula is still in place. It has not been changed. In fact, that's why Michael Rebell, the same attorney that filed the lawsuit in May of 93, filed another lawsuit in February 2014, seeking the amount of money the children of New York State, not only New York City, the children of New York State, what they're entitled to. And that's what this fight is about.
Yeah, and I would mention that the State Education Commissioner, Mary Ellen Elia, and the Board of Regents also think that the state should be spending about twice as much this year on education, right? The governor's proposed just under $1 billion, and you think it should be, what, about $2 billion? Is that right, to make
it
whole?
Yeah, well, you know, not only the commissioner and the Board of Regents, but everyone who came to testify in the 12-hour hearing that we had last week, in which I sat through the entire hearing, everyone is on board that our children statewide are entitled to more money, and they want what the children are entitled to. So I say to people, we're not asking for anything in addition to what they're entitled to, nothing more. Give them what was agreed to, based so that every child will have the opportunity to receive a sound basic education. And I say to you, that's the minimum standard that the state is obligated to give.
And those words you're mentioning, those are in the state's constitution, right? Entitled to a sound basic education.
Yeah, the highest court call it an adequate education. So it depends on the words, but it means, and you know what the highest court said? Every child should have the opportunity to graduate from high school knowing how to read, knowing how to write, knowing how to serve on the jury, and being able to hold competitive employment. That's in the decision. That's what we want for our children.
So do you think the governor is playing the usual budget game here, lowballing education, knowing that the legislature traditionally restores it and that will keep you guys occupied so you're not bothering with other, you know, policy matters or issues that he doesn't want you to bother with?
You know, our governor is a master at classic divide and conquer. So, you know, I've heard upstate versus downstate, rich versus poor, urban versus city, rural versus city. The bottom line is that every child, no matter where they live, and based on the testimony of all of the superintendents from Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, the BOCES, and small rural districts, everyone is clamoring to give them what they're entitled to under the law. That's what they want.
Now, I want to ask you about something else that the governor's been saying the last couple of years, and he's saying the issue isn't that there's not enough money being given to schools. He's saying it's the fault of the individual districts, like New York City, Rochester, Buffalo, that you're laughing already before
classic
I even lay this out, where he's saying that it's the districts that are starving their poorest schools in their districts.
The districts that are starving? No. As a mother, would you starve your child? The answer is no. The governor is playing classic divide and conquer. He's saying, you know, that the state is giving them the money. You know, people ask me, where are we going to get the $4 billion that owed to the New York State children? And my response, it's in the budget. The money is already there. We're not asking for anything new. We're only asking to give our kids what they're entitled to under the Constitution of New York State. And Michael Rebell, in this current new case that we had, at every level, Supreme Court, the appellate division, the highest court, when the state attorney general, via our governor, Andrew Cuomo, tried to dismiss the case, at every level, they said, no, we're not dismissing the case. The case has merit. And CFE is alive and well.
Wow. So I want to ask you about how you came to be here. You're a freshman senator, but obviously you've had a life before you became senator. You're one of the several Democrats who challenged the IDC, the Independent Democratic Conference, who are often criticized for siding with the Republicans. You beat Marisol Alcantara in a primary. So what made you decide to run for Senate, and what was that campaign about?
Wow. Well, I'm a newbie. I consider myself a newbie. I'm still finding the best way to get around here in Albany. Even though I'm an experienced legislator, as you know, I served 12 years in the city council. I was on the education committee for 12 years, and I chaired education for 8 years. The bottom line is that when Democrats run as Democrats, and then they break away from the Democrats and form an alliance with the Republicans that are negatively impacting the constituents that we represent, in my opinion, the voters should vote them out. And that's what happened. You had eight of them, including Jeff Klein, who was the leader. Mm-hmm. Six out of eight of them lost. Marisol Alcantara, you know, I wish her the best in whatever she does, but she lost by 10,000 votes.
Yeah, so it's already been different around here as a longtime Albany correspondent. We've seen things happen really quickly. A lot, every week there's some major bills that are passing. I mean, you haven't been here to really see the difference, but do you expect that this is the new way the Senate's going to be? And how do you, you know, keep going and doing things differently?
So Andrea Stewart Cousins, who we elected as a Democratic leader before we elected her as a majority leader, she said, get used to coming to meetings on time and get used to discussing matters of importance for a longer period of time. Because when the Republicans were in control of the New York State Senate, the Democrats couldn't get anything done. And so if they came late to a meeting, or if they were only met for 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, because they knew that the Republicans were in control and anything that they were putting forward could not be done. But now, things are on the move. Let me tell you what Gustavo Rivera has said to me and others. He said with so much enthusiasm, you don't know what it's like. We've been held up for 8 years, at least he has, because he's been 8 years.
Yep, one of your Senate colleagues.
And now we're getting things done. You just don't know. And I truly believe him, because the Reproductive Health Act, the election laws, you know, the DREAM Act, and many other things are being passed. And you know one thing? Some people don't like it, but many, many people think it's clearly appropriate. And that's why you have this blue wave that's come about. And I say that the Democrats are not in control. The Democrats are in leadership under Andrea Stewart Cousins, the first woman to ever be the majority leader in the history of the state of New York, who happens to be a woman of color.
As you know, it's Black History Month, February. Wondering if there were African American leaders that you looked up to or mentors that you had in your long and successful career.
Well, when I think of people that have influenced my life, I've mentioned before Irwin Goldberg, my track coach at Benjamin Franklin High School, and he was not Black. He's white and he's Jewish, but he made all the difference for me in putting an application in my hand for the Upward Bound program. And that's why I'm here today. But as far as African Americans, I am a member of the NAACP. They've fought legally for people of color for decades and decades. I'm a member of NAN, the National Action Network. Mm-hmm. And some people have negative opinions about Al Sharpton.
Al Sharpton has
done a good job in communicating some of the truth and about things that need to be done. And so Malcolm X took no mess from anyone. He stood up for what he believed was right. And he saw the difference between the Muslims here in the United States when he went abroad and went to Mecca, and he saw that Muslims were white, Black, yellow, all kind of colors from all over the world. And that opened up his eyes. So those are some of the people that I appreciate and I think that have brought about the changes in our society from a positive point of view.
All right, Karen, great interview. Worth noting, the senator is the first Muslim lawmaker in the history of New York State. Is that correct?
That's right. It's hard to believe that nobody who of the Muslim religion has been in the legislature by now, but he is the first one. He also told me that he's very committed to this education issue, and he said he's willing to hold up the state budget over school funding. And if that doesn't happen, he'd at least vote no on the budget. Mm-hmm.
Well, coming up next week, we travel to the North Country, where one municipality has found a way to keep a smaller amount of salt from getting into the Queen of American Lakes.
It really was the science that demonstrated we are putting down way too much salt. We're seeing elevated concentrations in the lake itself. We're seeing spiking levels in the streams that feed this lake. And we're seeing some serious ecological impacts as a consequence.
All right, that'll do it for us this week. We end the show with video from the village of Lake George. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
I'm Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.